Hi, everybody. This is Willie from Willie's World. This is Willie's World, episode number 9, entitled, How Deep is the Deep State? Well, first of all, what is a deep state? Here's a definition from Wikipedia. The deep state is believed to be a clandestine network entrenched inside the government bureaucracy, intelligence agencies, and other government entities. The deep state supposedly controls state policy behind the scenes, while the democratically elected process and elected officials are merely figureheads. The intro music you heard is from a movie called Eyes Wide Shut, the last movie made by Stanley Kubrick. And in the movie, he has a secret society that of elites, mostly rich people, who basically control the lives of poor people. And you say to yourself, well, thank God we don't have something like that today, right? Well, sort of do. There's something currently called Ordo Templi Orientis, or OTO, Order of the Temple of the East. It's an international fraternal and religious organization founded at the beginning of the 20th century. And, well, who would want to join a crazy thing like that? Well, for example, Jay-Z and his wife are members. And they have paraphernalia you can buy with the logos on it. So there you have one example. But, you know, with the current talk about the deep state, you keep hearing about, you know, maybe what we're seeing is the tip of the iceberg being the entire deep state. And if what I'm seeing is the tip of the iceberg, we got a huge berg on our hands here. Who knows how big it is? Anyway, listen to the following clip, which is Sean Hannity interviewing Mark Levin, to give you an idea of how big the tip of the iceberg is.
All right, here to weigh in on all of tonight's big developments, the host of CRTV's Levin TV, and the host right here on the Fox News Channel, Life, Liberty, and Levin. Thank me. How am I? Let me bring this audience behind the scenes. You and I talk a lot. We're best friends. You called me this weekend. And like the both of us were apoplectic about not just McCabe, but how this is the beginning, the level of deep state corruption, and how the media in this country lies to the American people. I'll let you say it your own eloquent way, Mr. Levin.
All right. As somebody who worked at the Justice Department, I want you folks watching to understand a couple of things. The Inspector General is an independent official, professional within the Department of Justice. This Inspector General was appointed by Barack Obama. Then you have the Office of Professional Responsibility, in this case, in the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They investigate professional wrongdoing or accusations. These are how the people in these offices are civil servants. They're experienced lawyers. And what's happening here, Sean, is when you look at it this way, folks, the director of the FBI, Comey, and the deputy director, McCabe, these were bad cops. They were bad cops. They were politicizing the FBI. They were obstructing certain investigations. They were pressing their foot on the gas pedal in other investigations. They are bad cops. So the institutions within the Department of Justice and FBI that deal with this have been raising red flags. The Inspector General, appointed by Obama, and the head of OPR, appointed by Mueller when he was the FBI director, they looked at it. Trump had nothing to do with it. They wouldn't care what Trump had to say anyway. They go to the Attorney General of the United States and say, you need to fire this guy. By the way, the new FBI director, who is apparently in the witness protection program, he put the guy on suspension forever. So the new FBI director, the IG, the OPR, the Attorney General of the United States would have done a horrific miscarriage of justice if he had not fired McCabe. A bad cop who authorized leaks and then apparently lied about it to the IG and OPR.
Under
but they
oath.
Had the goods on him.
Under oath.
Under oath. Now, here's what's stunning. You have a media in this country, a Democrat Party, and some Republicans, like Lindsey Graham and Marco Rubio, they're very concerned for this man, that he might lose his pension. He's not going to lose his pension. Whatever money he put into his pension, he gets. It's just that you and me and Mr. and Mrs. Taxpayer don't have to contribute to his pension for the rest of his life. Why are we supposed to be concerned about this? This man may have committed crimes. He should be in front of a federal grand jury. The problem is, we don't have a federal grand jury to investigate him or Comey. Now, Comey is like the mob boss of the operation. All this was happening under him. Stroke, Page, him, all the rest of it. All the rest of it. And Comey's a known leaker. He confessed because he didn't want to commit perjury. And now he's caught with his former deputy at a point here where the former deputy said, yes, everything I did, Comey knew. And as you pointed out, Comey testified he didn't. These are bad people who did bad things. And we expect the head of the FBI and the deputy head to do the right thing. But they were bad cops. I want to go on. All this tweeting. James Comey, we talked about. Brennan. Do the American people remember that this jerk, that his CIA was spying on staff for the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he denied it, and then he had to go back and apologize because under this jerk, they were spying on the Senate Intelligence Committee? Do people remember Samantha Power? Under this jerk, they were unmasking Americans left and right at historic numbers like never before. Her excuse? People were unmasking Americans with my name. She didn't know anything about it. You remember Eric Holder? That jerk repeatedly lied about his knowledge when it came to Fast and Furious. The only attorney general in American history to be held in contempt. He targeted journalists at the AP, at Fox. He refused to investigate abuses at the IRS. He was involved in the pardon of Mark Rich. Even the DOJ IG at some point testified. Senior officials under Holder were blocking access to documents. Clapper, who can forget that jerk for lying in front of Congress about what they were doing to the American people with their spying? What we have here, unmasking, spying, leaking, covering up leak, lie about leaks. It would be nice if Trey Gowdy, for once, would go on television and say, you know, I really do think something's wrong here, and Mr. Mueller, you're investigating the wrong thing. He's on TV, and he says, we're not investigating Mueller, a collaboration with the Russians anymore. We're investigating Russian interference with our election. That's his mandate. Well, maybe Mr. Gowdy can explain something to us. Then why isn't Mr. Mueller dragging Hillary Clinton in front of the grand jury, or the head of the DNC in front of the grand jury, or other people associated with the dossier in front of the grand jury? Why isn't he dragging his friend James Comey in front of the grand jury? He had to sign off on the FISA application, or Mr. McCabe.
Or
he had
Rosenstein.
To sign off on the FISA application, or Rosenstein, or Loretta Lynch.
Yep.
Because Mr. Mueller's not investigating interference in the Russia in the campaign. Because if he was, he'd do not only what I said, but he'd be investigating Comey and McCabe for interfering in our election. Here's the big story. The Obama administration did more to interfere with our election than the loathsome Vladimir Putin. Whether it's unmasking, whether it's Susan Rice refusing to allow the cyberspace folks to investigate, the Obama administration did more to interfere with our election than the Russians. That's the story.
Great one. You're one of the hardest interviews I've ever had. That is a superb analysis. Serious, good job, as always. Life, Liberty, and Levin, every Sunday night, 10 p.m., number one show on cable, and you don't want to miss it. When we come back, Peter Schweitzer, a new book about government, officials, and corruption. Remember, he wrote the number one bestseller, Clinton Cash.
Good golly molly, if that's the tip of the iceberg, the berg itself must be ginormous, and I think it is. Let's listen to another clip here from Laura Ingraham. She's got a different take on the whole thing, and she shows you a place where the deep staters are hiding in plain sight. Happens to be the Democratic Party. So give a listen.
Over the weekend, Democrats bent over backwards. Now, not to lament the outrageous lack of truthfulness by former FBI Director Andrew McCabe, but to lament his firing.
What the president did was one of the biggest, I think, character flaws that we see in him. He just lacks human decency. It was cruel the way he did this, to fire someone literally hours before they would have got their pension.
President Trump announced we have 90 days to get McCabe before he retires. he put out basically a hit on him and said, do this before he qualifies for retirement.
I've never seen a president of the United States go after an individual. This is awfully mean-spirited.
Now, frankly, he should have been sacked a long time ago. And you notice what the Democrats weren't discussing there? But let's face it, the government here followed a meticulous process, and they did this all by the book, which is good. The Justice Department's Inspector General forwarded its findings on the conduct of McCabe to the FBI's Office of Professional Responsibility. And it was they who determined that McCabe should be fired. It's a big decision. Now, just so you all know, this office is staffed with career personnel, not Trump loyalists. So when the government learns of wrongdoing, shouldn't it act immediately without regard of who cares when someone's retiring? If it was wrong, it was wrong. And that's what the Justice Department did here. Well, you'll notice that none of the McCabe defenders that you just heard mention the actual reasons for his dismissal, because those are very inconvenient. He's charged with leaking information about an ongoing investigation, the one into the Clinton email scandal, to the Wall Street Journal. Attorney General Sessions said that McCabe lacked candor about those leaks, and at times he did so under oath. That's a big no-no. Now, in a response on Friday night, McCabe claims that the media leaks were done with the permission of the former FBI Director Jim Comey. Now, that could be a big problem for Comey. Why? Well, he's already testified under oath to Congress that he did not engage in leaking, nor did he authorize any leaks. Someone's lying here. And we haven't even talked about Andrew McCabe's conflict of interest. He should have recused himself from investigating Hillary Clinton since his wife, Jill, when she was running for state office in Virginia, received nearly $468,000 from Clinton pal Terry McAuliffe's PAC. And by the way, four other Clinton bundlers contributed $130,000 to Mrs. McCabe's campaign. Not a bad haul. And that doesn't constitute at least the appearance of a conflict of interest for her husband, who is investigating Mrs. Clinton? It is patently obvious at this point that the Democrats and their media toadies will defend and or ignore any lawlessness so long as it achieves their political end. Which is what? To win back power in Congress and eventually run President Trump out of office. But I was thinking about this. You know, this endorsement of lawlessness, looking the other way at conflicts of interest, this isn't an isolated incident for the left. Remember, these are the same people who applaud the compassion and the courage of public officials who push sanctuary policies in cities like Chicago, Hartford, Connecticut, and all across California. So the average working person has to suffer as violent illegal alien offenders roam free after being released from jail in places like Oakland and down in L.A. And by the way, these are the same people who made all kind of lame excuses for the rioting and destruction by mobs in Baltimore following Freddie Gray's death, and ditto for the nights of looting and fires, those terrible events in Ferguson following the police shooting of Michael Brown. Now, recall that juries acquitted the police officers in each case. And by the way, the same type of people who, going back to the Obama era, they didn't bat an eye when Eric Holder declined to prosecute IRS official Lois Lerner for discriminating against conservative 501c groups. And didn't care that Eric Holder stonewalled Congress regarding the Fast and Furious scandal. Which, by the way, I forgot until today, which led to a criminal contempt of Congress resolution against Holder. And, of course, we all remember there were no repercussions for Susan Rice. Remember when she went out and lied to the American people about what spurred that attack on our government compound in Benghazi, Libya? In fact, the only person who was actually charged after four Americans were killed there, including the U.S. ambassador, was a man named Ahmed Abu Qatala. And he was found not guilty of 14 of the 18 counts against him. Unbelievable. No accountability. And let us not forget the Democrats, who once prided themselves on caring about protecting civil liberties, they don't seem at all bothered about using the vast power of our intelligence services to spy on members of Donald Trump's campaign team. Although the Democrats and their media surrogates seem fine with this by any means necessary approach, I do not think most Americans are. Check this out. It's a new Monmouth poll that finds that over half of the American public is either very or somewhat worried that the U.S. government is monitoring their activities and invading their privacy. In other words, they're noticing the overreach of the deep state, and they don't like it. This matters to voters. It should. If any of us had done what McCabe did, we'd probably already be in jail. And he may yet be. To understand the dangers at play here, remember when President Trump vowed to reform the intelligence services as he came into office? Do you recall the chilling response of Senator Chuck Schumer at the time?
Let me tell you, you take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
And the deep state has tried to get Trump six ways to Sunday ever since. And even when they are caught, as McCabe was, Democrats will defend them because they all share the same goal. At every level, the Democrats have either willingly enabled or tolerated lawlessness, conflicts of interest, and rank bias within our government because they want power back. And that's why they've contorted themselves into these pretzels to protect Hillary, and that's why they're relentlessly pursuing Donald Trump. But I'm telling you, this approach may end up backfiring. President Trump's approval numbers have gone up 4% to 43% in the last month. Maybe I'm being too optimistic, maybe. But I think Americans have a strong sense of innate fairness. And if the Democrats' idea of public service is seen to embrace weaponizing intelligence, spying on American citizens, and yet dismissing obvious criminal acts when committed by their own party or illegal immigrants, well, they may themselves need a November miracle to pull off the kind of wave election that they've been banking on. We'll see. And that's the angle.
So we have the deep staters that are still in elected office trying to destroy the government from inside the elected government. Then we have unelected bureaucrats, of which there are thousands and thousands of thousands, many of them holdovers from the Obama administration. Up Chuck Schumer is doing the best he can to keep them from being replaced by Trump administration appointments by extending the confirmation process as long as they possibly can. So there's many, many, many of the vacancies or existing deep staters that should be replaced that are unfilled. And then we have the mainstream media. Many of the commentators on CNN, MSLSD, et cetera, are former government officials, all from the left. And the prime example would be George Snuffleupagus from Channel 7. He's been a lapdog for the Clintons while he was in government working for the Clintons, and ever since, shilling for them on Channel 7. In the next step, we have perfect example of the mainstream media people coming from the government. I call these two the deep stater brothers, Clapper and Brennan.
Speaking to reporters on Air Force One in a conversation, the White House will not allow us to play the audio from. President Trump says he, quote, really believes Putin means it when he says he didn't meddle, saying, quote, he says, I didn't do that. I think he is very insulted by it. If you want to know the truth, don't forget. All he said is he never did that. He didn't do that. I think he's very insulted by it, which is not a good thing for our country, unquote. And then he went on to suggest the assessment of the U.S. intelligence community was politically motivated. He said, quote, I mean, give me a break. They're political hacks. So you look at it. I mean, you have Brennan, you have Clapper, and you have Comey. Comey's proven now to be a liar, and he's proven to be a leaker. So you look at that, and you have President Putin very strongly, vehemently says he had nothing to do with that. Here to respond directly to the president's comments are two of the former intelligence chiefs the president called out, former CIA Director John Brennan and former Director of National Intelligence General James Clapper. I'll just start. What is your response, Mr. Brennan, to what President Trump said about Vladimir Putin and U.S. intelligence agencies?
Well, I think Mr. Trump knows that the intelligence agencies, specifically CIA, NSA, and FBI, the ones that really have responsibility for counterintelligence and looking at what Russia does, it's very clear that the Russians interfered in the election, and it's still puzzling as to why Mr. Trump does not acknowledge that and embrace it and also push back hard against Mr. Putin. The Russian threat to our democracy and our democratic foundations is real, and I think his continuing to not say very clearly and strongly that this is a national security problem and to say to Mr. Putin, we know you did it, you'd have to stop it because there are going to be consequences if you don't.
And he, once again, he said what he said and he, originally and giving the impression to a lot of people that he sided with Putin and he started attacking the U.S. intelligence agencies, you two in particular. And then when given an opportunity to clarify, to say what do you believe, he didn't really clarify. He said, he didn't say, I believe Russia interfered in the 2016 election and I think they need to stop and I take it very seriously. He said, Putin believes what he believes and, you know, I side with our intelligence agencies. But it was vague. Why do you think he does that?
I don't know why the ambiguity about this, because the threat posed by Russia, as John just said, is manifest and obvious and has been for a long time. Putin is committed to undermining our system, our democracy, and our whole process, and to try to paint it in any other way. Is, I think, astounding and, in fact, poses a peril to this country.
What threat, what peril does it pose to the country?
Well, for one, as we've seen in the evidence that's come out since the publication of our intelligence community assessment on the 6th of January, it further reinforces the depth and magnitude and scope and the aggressiveness of the Russian interference, to include their very astute use of social media. Apart from that, something we don't think about too much is the fact that the Russians are embarked on a very aggressive modernization of their strategic nuclear forces to include a very capable and scary counter space program. They only have one adversary in mind when they do this. And oh, by the way, the Russians are in abject violation of the INF Treaty, the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. So the Russians do not harbor good intentions toward the United States. And there shouldn't be any illusions or any ambiguity about that. And our president fosters that ambiguity.
The president also called both of you and FBI Director Comey political hacks. All three of you worked in senior levels in the Obama administration, although you also worked during the Bush administration. How do you respond to the charge?
Well, first of all, he was referring to us as political hacks because he was trying to delegitimize the intelligence community assessment that was done. Jim Clapper, Jim Comey, and John Brennan did not write that assessment. It was written by the professional intelligence officers and law enforcement officers of this great country. Secondly, I feel very honored to be associated with Jim Clapper and Jim Comey in the same category. And considering the source of the criticism, I consider that criticism a badge of honor. And third, I found it particularly reprehensible that on Veterans Day, that Donald Trump would attack and impugn the integrity and the character of Jim Clapper, who served in uniform for 35 years, who responded to the call of his country to go to Vietnam, flew in over 70 combat support missions over Vietnam, and like Senator McCain, really did put his life at risk because of this country's national security. And to impugn the character of somebody like Jim Clapper on Veterans Day, who has dedicated so much of his life to this country, I just find that outrageous, and it's something that I think that that Mr. Trump should be ashamed of, but it doesn't seem as though anything he does, he feels any shame whatsoever.
What is the effect of these attacks, not on you two or Jim Comey, but on other people in the FBI, in the CIA, in the NSA, people who are still there, who worked under you and are still there working to try to make the country safer?
First, I have to reciprocate what an honor it has been to serve with the likes of John Brennan and Jim Comey, who are dedicated public servants and have served this country long and well and with great integrity. I think cannot have a positive impact on the morale of the workforce and the intelligence community, but I do believe in my heart that the men and women of the intelligence community will continue to convey truth to power even if the power ignores the truth.
At one point, President Trump said he thinks Vladimir Putin is insulted by the suggestion and the conclusion by the intelligence agencies that Russia interfered in the U.S. election. What do you make of that, his bringing up that Putin feels insulted?
Well, I think Mr. Putin is very clever in terms of playing to Mr. Trump's interest in being flattered. And also, I think Mr. Trump is, for whatever reason, either intimidated by Mr. Putin, afraid of what he could do or what might come out as a result of these investigations. So it's very worrisome, and I think it sends a worrisome, very disturbing signal to our allies and partners who are concerned about Russian interference in their democratic processes as well. So it's either naivete, ignorance, or fear in terms of what Mr. Trump is doing vis-a-vis the Russians.
President Trump took to Twitter yesterday to try to justify his position, his posture towards Russia. He said, quote, "When will all the haters and fools out there realize that having a good relationship with Russia is a good thing, not a bad thing? They're always playing politics." There was misspelled. "They're always playing politics, bad for our country. I want to solve North Korea, Syria, Ukraine, terrorism, and Russia. You can greatly help." So that's his argument. Russia can be a help on these issues, and that the stature, the posture of being belligerent towards Russia won't assist in that matter.
Well, I suppose they could be, but I think it's naive to assume they will be. Again, the likelihood that the Russians are going to pursue like interests with us is slim and none. And I think it's very naive and again, in fact, perilous to this country to make an assumption that Russia is going to behave with the best interests of the world or certainly the United States in mind. They're not.
So, Mr. Brennan, Director Brennan, you said a couple minutes ago, you talked about the reasons why President Trump might be susceptible to what Putin tells him. And you talked about flattery. You also talked about fear. I can't ignore the fact that all of this comes at a time when there's a lot of speculation about whether or not the Russians have damaging information about President Trump. This comes, of course, within the context of the fact that President Trump has been willing to criticize everyone from the cast of Hamilton to Meryl Streep, but has yet to say one disparaging word about Vladimir Putin. Do you think this idea that maybe the Russians have something about on him, have compromising material, is relevant here?
Well, I don't know if Mr. Trump is considering that. I just know that he has been very determined to try to delegitimize any effort to come up with the truth in terms of this investigation. His attacks on the intelligence community, on the assessment, the attacks on the media. This is an effort to, again, try to undermine those quarters that could pose a serious threat to him. Also, I think it shows the insecurity that he still feels about the election and how Russian interference may have contributed, in fact, to that election. So I think there's a combination of factors that are motivating the president at this time.
Do you know of any compromising material that the Russians might have on him?
I have shared everything I know with the intelligence committees.
That's not a no or a yes, because we're not privy to the information that you gave to the intelligence committees.
That's true.
You know. Okay. Let me ask you a question about how in 2016 you were all watching and monitoring and assessing what was going on with the Russian interference. In retrospect, was it a mistake of President Obama not to make a bigger public deal of this at the time?
Well, this is in the coulda, woulda, shoulda department. Bearing in mind, there really wasn't much of a template or rule book for how to handle a situation like this. I think the arguments, the concern that the administration had was, if we did make a big public deal of this, would we first be amplifying what the Russians were doing? And I think, frankly, the president was probably sensitive to the accusation that he was putting his hand on the scale and trying to affect the outcome of the election if he spoke up about it. Now, we did. We put out a statement. At the time, then Secretary of Homeland Security Jay Johnson and I put out a statement on the 7th of October, which was a pretty forthright statement about what the Russians were doing, and it was issued before the election. Unfortunately, it got emasculated and overcome by the excess Hollywood tapes, and so it sort of got lost in all that. So I think what was done was appropriate. I guess you could go back and say, well, we should have been more aggressive or done something earlier. I don't know, but there were there were good reasons why there was caution and discretion here.
Director Brennan, so General Clapper just said there wasn't a template, but Russians have been attempting to interfere in elections before. 2016 was not the first time. It was the most successful time ever, probably, in Russian history. But it wasn't the first time. Why were the intelligence agencies, and not just the intelligence agencies, law enforcement, communications, every part of the government, why was it not better prepared?
Well, I think we were prepared. It's a question of during campaign season, you want to be able to understand everything that the Russians might do. So we had a responsibility to make sure the president and the Congress were informed, public statements that were made about Russian attempts to interfere. At the same time, we wanted to be able to know what they were doing so that we might be able to thwart anything more extensive that they might have done. And I do think that the pushback, both publicly and privately against the Russians, gave the Russians some pause because it was made very clear to them that we were onto their game and that it was going to have very serious consequences. So I think the intelligence community, law enforcement, have their counterintelligence antenna up all the time. And I think we did a pretty admirable job.
Since you two left the office in January 2017, we've learned more about attempts by the Russians to reach out to the Trump campaign. We've learned about Donald Trump Jr. eagerly accepting a meeting to get dirt on Hillary Clinton from somebody he was told was a Russian lawyer. We've learned with the Comey plea agreement with George Papadopoulos, former foreign advisor for the Trump campaign. We've learned that he was told by a professor with ties to the Kremlin in April 2016, long before I knew anything about the hacking or the public knew anything about the hacking, that the Russians were claiming that they had damaging information. Now, you said in January 2017, this year, that you knew of no collusion. Did you know of those two events?
No, I did not. And the statement I made at the time was true. I had no direct evidence of collusion. Now, we had lots of concerns because we were aware of multiple meetings that were going on, while at least my part was not aware directly of the content of these meetings. But we were certainly concerned, and the metaphor I've used before is that I think our dashboard warning lights were clearly on about what was going on. But to say specifically that we had evidence of smoking gun evidence of collusion, no. But, of course, a lot more has come out. Raises, I think, circumstantial questions, if nothing else.
What message do you think President Trump is sending to Vladimir Putin right now in terms of Russia's continued attempts to interfere in elections in Europe and potentially in the United States again?
Well, I think what he's doing is saying to Vladimir Putin, we need to put this behind us because there's important work to be done. And I agree, we need to be able to find a way to improve relations between Moscow and Washington. But I think by not confronting the issue directly and not acknowledging to Putin that we know that you're responsible for this, I think he's giving Putin a pass. And I think it demonstrates to Mr. Putin that Donald Trump can be played by foreign leaders who are going to appeal to his ego and to try to play upon his insecurities, which is very, very worrisome from a national security standpoint.
Do you agree that Donald Trump can be played by foreign leaders like Putin? And if so, does that make you concerned about the security of the United States?
I do. I think, he seems very susceptible to rolling out the red carpet and honor guards and all the trappings and pomp and circumstance that come with the office. And I think that that appeals to him, and I think it plays to his insecurities. And yes, I do think both the Chinese and the Russians think they can play him.
And then lastly, do you know, and maybe you can't answer this question, but do you know, Director Brennan, of any laws broken by the Trump campaign, anybody affiliated with the Trump campaign, when it comes to working with the Russians on election interference?
I'm just a former intelligence officer. I never had the responsibility for determining whether or not criminal actions were taken. But since leaving office on the 20th of January, I think more and more of this iceberg is emerging above the surface of the water. Some of the things that I knew about, but some of the things I didn't know about in terms of some of the social media efforts that Russia employed. So I think what Bob Mueller, who again is another quintessential public servant, is doing is trying to get to the bottom of this. And I think we're going to find out how large this iceberg really is.
All right. And if I could add, I just think it's absolutely critical for the country that there be closure on this and there be some finality to what did happen.
All right, General Clapper and Director Brennan, thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You also have the deep staters extremely active in social media, as one could imagine. And here's a couple of select comments on Twitter from some of these folks. Quote, "The next few months will demonstrate whether America is governed by the rule of law or the rule of a demagogue enabled by a corrupt political party." Ben Rhodes. Quote, "When the full extent of your venality, moral turpitude, and political corruption becomes known, you will take your right place in the disgraced demagogue, as a disgraced demagogue in the dustbin of American history. You may scapegoat Andy McKay, but you will not destroy America. America will triumph over you." John Brennan. Quote, "Not a good idea to piss off John Brennan," unquote. Samantha Power. Pretty depressing, eh? Well, if you're really bummed out about this, no worries, because we the people got it covered, and we the people shall never relinquish our beloved country. To leave you on a positive note, I'm going to leave you with a clip from John Coltrane titled "A Few of My Favorite Things." Bye.